Hey, colleagues, welcome back to the office. It's Steve. Welcome to our podcast for today. This is Amazing Accounting Add-ons for Your Firm, Part 1. We're actually off today. This is a presentation from a recent State Society conference, which I thought you would enjoy. And our presentation is going to be looking at different add-on tools for our accounting packages. Rarely does the accounting package for our company, whether we're talking about QuickBooks or SAP or something in between, do exactly what we would like to do for our organization. Often it'll have things we really like, maybe great reporting, maybe really strong accounts payable or receivable, but maybe it's missing or lacking certain functionality in other areas which are important to the organization. Maybe, for example, we want something that can do employee expense tracking or manage documents or manage the sales from our e-commerce and others. Well, that's where these third-party tools, these add-on tools, can come in. They extend the underlying platform to add additional features and functions to the accounting system that were not present in the actual application itself. It's a great way of taking something that we're already using and making it even better for our company's use. So there are so many different ways that we can do this and so many different tools that we can consider. Stuff for better managing people, stuff for better managing equipment, stuff for better managing inventory, and really kind of everything in between. This class, presented in two parts, is going to be looking at all these different tools and why you might want to consider them. In our first part of the presentation, what we'll be discussing today will be the accounting landscape. We're going to look at, for example, the different types of accounting tools that are out there and at what level of tool are they. You know, we have everything from small business to medium business and large business and really kind of everything in between. Additionally, we have tools that are made for the cloud and tools that are made for on-premise deployments. Lots of different options that we can consider. And you could find a tool that will fit your organization very well in the particular method of deployment that you've gone with. We're also going to take a look at the different ways that data can be shared and synced across these different solutions. Whether they're, for example, pulling data through what's called an ODBC connection, Open Database Connectivity, or REST API, or something else. In the second presentation, which will be presented later, we're going to look at the actual tools themselves, from inventory management, e-commerce management, employee expense management, time management, and so much more. So I do want to remind you that if you are a financial professional, and I hope you are, you can earn CPE credit for watching or listening to today's podcast. It's super simple. After watching or listening, head on over to cpetoday.com. Use course code AA01. Again, that is cpetoday.com. Use course code AA01, and you can earn a credit for watching or listening to today's class. So if you need to maintain credits, this is a great way to stay on top of those credits and maintain your licensing, watching YouTube videos or listening to podcasts, something you're probably already doing. So I'm going to go ahead and switch over to our presentation for today. At the end of our presentation, I'll join back up with you. We'll do three quick review questions and finish up for the day. I hope you enjoy the presentation, and I'll see you at the end. And start off with just a quick market overview and understanding with respect to where and how these different systems function and where and how they work. Okay, so what we have here is the K2 pyramid of accounting solutions. And we need to understand that there are different solutions for different styles of organizations and at different levels. When I think about accounting systems, I think about it in a couple of different ways, but I think about it in terms of revenue and employees. Those are usually two pretty good metrics. But then I also think about it in terms of complexity of that accounting system. I know a fairly number of small organizations that have high complexity in their accounting system with lots of journal entries and lots of functionality around it. And I also know a fair number of large organizations that are pretty simple, you know, organizations that do millions of dollars in sales, but it might occur in just a couple of transactions because it might be, for example, you know, a government contract, or it might just be simple professional services. So it's important to kind of understand where your organization might fall in this pyramid. Okay. Now, at the entry level, micro business, these are entrepreneurs, these are QuickBooks organizations. You'll see this here in a minute. A lot of people will fall in this. I'm going to say, you know, because this is the base of our pyramid, this is probably 75% of the market overall. Likewise, our enterprise up here, you know, that's probably less than 5% overall, you know, and we see that both in terms of number of organizations, as well as employees and revenue. What we tend to focus on a lot right here is this mid-market level. This mid-market level is really kind of where a lot of attention is spent because so many different organizations can choose to operate in here. You know, they might not hit it in terms of revenue, they might not hit it in terms of employee, but they might hit it with respect to the overall complexity of the different systems that they work in. And so we call that typically the mid-market or the SMB market space. And that's where I personally like to live. I think that's where the most money is to be made. And I mean, truthfully, there's so much work on opposite sides of this. You know, getting those large enterprise contracts and large enterprise deals and companies is a ton of work. And you know, truthfully, when you're working at the really small side of this, the entrepreneurs and startups, I mean, it's equal. But you know, they typically don't have the revenue to be able to justify some of the projects that can be done. So this chart, while it looks quite busy, I really like because it kind of helps understand the major pieces of where different companies fall in to which type of products. Okay, so a couple things. Let's dive in and try to understand where and how to read this chart. So on the left-hand side here, we have SaaS cloud-based solutions. On the right over here, we have our hosted on-premise solutions. We'll talk more about cloud and hosted here in a minute because there are some fundamental differences between them that we should be aware of. But what this chart tries to do is either for cloud products or hosted products, give you some insight where those products fit in into size of organization and in terms of where they function. You know, up here at the enterprise level, this is where we're going to see our Workday, our SAPs, our Oracles, our Infor. These are very, 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 very large accounting solutions with a lot of complexity built into them. I mean, Oracle, SAP, I mean, that's what's running your Fortune 500. Likewise, on the Workday side, on the SaaS side of this, you know, these functionalities are massive. If we look at SAP, for example, I mean, it's not just an accounting solution. It is a full-blown business management solution with enterprise resource planning, ERP, customer relationship management, CRM, and more. And they already have pretty much every add-on that you can think of. And also, they can be extended in any number of ways. So on the high end, on the enterprise side of this, these are platforms, you know, that can be extended multiple different ways to account for really kind of any complexity a company might need in its business management systems. Often the implementation fees of solutions on the high-end enterprise side are as much or more than the actual software itself. You know, and over here in this SMB side, we start to see some of the more friendly names you've heard us talk about in the K2 space. Solutions like Acumatica, for example. If you're attending our mid-market accounting update here, which will be my closing session at 1:30 today, I'll be talking a little bit about Acumatica and why you might want to consider it for a ERP system for your organization. Likewise, we've got other solutions like Epicore, you know, on the more high end of the SMB side. Really kind of the main companies, the consumer brands that you're probably mostly familiar with, your QuickBooks, your Xeros, your Cashews, your Waves, FreshBooks, things like this. These are all, I would consider them entry-level markets. You know, even though a product, for example, like QuickBooks Enterprise has the word enterprise built into it, it is not an enterprise product in the traditional sense of what we would consider an enterprise product being. It is still rather entry-level for what it can do. You know, it doesn't give a lot of complexity with respect to the accounting system. It doesn't also give a lot of complexity with respect to inventory or manufacturing. And truthfully, it really can't easily be extended as well. Really, where you're going to get the best bang for your buck is going to be in this SMB level where you can really kind of tack on just about anything to these solutions. Now, whether you choose to go cloud-based or you choose to go on-premise, that is a discussion that I'm sure you will need to work out inside of your organizations, but there are pluses and minuses to each of them. Let's go ahead and talk about what some of those might be here. Okay. So we have cloud-based products, and then we also have hosted products, and then kind of as a hybrid in between, we've got our cloud connected products. Okay. Cloud products are products that natively run in the cloud in what we call a SaaS-based environment, software as a service. With a SaaS-based product, you have absolutely no control over how that product is deployed, updated, the security is applied, and any of the functionality that goes with it. If we look at, for example, QuickBooks Online, Xero, Zoho Books, BQE Core, so on and so forth, the product provider, the business, not business, but software provider, in this case, Intuit, for the QuickBooks products, or BQE for the BQE core products, they are making all the major design decisions with respect to what features, functions are there. And unless they support some sort of extendability, you're not going to get that functionality if it's not there already. The way QuickBooks, for example, accounts for inventory is the way QuickBooks accounts for inventory. You know, if you don't like it, tough. You know, your only other option would be to manage it off book and then use journal entries to bring it in. Now, thankfully, in the QuickBooks space, as well as in Xero and many of these other tools, they are extendable products, meaning they have an API, an application programming interface, a term that we will discuss here in our next section, that allows for data to be pushed and pulled from and to that solution. And so Intuit realizes, hey, we're not going to do everything. You know, it would be a lot better if our product plays nice with other products. And so they've allowed it to be extended so that other tools can come in and fill that void for functionality. Now, if it doesn't support that extendability, unfortunately, your options are going to be quite limited. But in a cloud-based environment, you're responsible for nothing. You just use the system. As long as you can get to the system and log in, it works. You're not responsible for the backup, the update, or anything else. Now, for the record, I love cloud-based products. I like using them, and I also like building them. And in fact, most of what my company does and the software that we make are cloud-based solutions. That, in my opinion, is probably appropriate for a lot of organizations because you don't have to deal with the headache of securing it, managing it, updating it, backing it up. It's the responsibility of the provider. Now, on the other side of this, we have on-premise or hosted solutions. Now, these can look and feel to the end user as cloud-based products. That's completely fine. But ultimately, the organization or somebody the organization delegates is going to be responsible for configuring these and installing these applications. Now, these solutions typically will be Windows-based, and they will require a traditional Windows-based desktop approach. Okay. And so they could be installed, for example, in a data center running something like Citrix or Microsoft RDP. And again, to the end user, it looks and feels like a cloud application because it's not installed on their local machine. But it's not. It's still a traditional based approach. A good example of this is QuickBooks Desktop, QBD, or QuickBooks Enterprise, QBE. These solutions are traditional applications. You can run them on your Windows machine right here in your office, or you could engage with a company like Ace Cloud Hosting or Centrum or Right Networks and have them host them in their office as well. And you would just connect to it in the same way that you would maybe use a service like TeamViewer or RealVNC to remote into a office environment. Okay. Now, you may or may not be responsible for the nature of the operation. You might have some decision making over the updates and things of this nature, but still, you know, it's a more traditional based. It's more in that traditional based approach than the cloud based. Cloud is natively cloud. It will run traditionally on a mobile app or in a browser. Hosted runs like a traditional Windows application. Now, we do have this middle ground here, cloud connected, okay? This is an on-premise solution where a lot of the execution of the program data takes place locally, but it'll use some sort of tool on the back end to typically sync the data with a cloud-based server and then make it available to other locations. A good example of this is the Sage 50, okay, as well as my QuickCloud, Sage Drive, and others, where you will essentially operate locally. You've got your QuickBooks installed on your local machine, okay? You make changes, and then on the back end, there's some sort of cloud syncing service where it will take that data, push it up to the web, and make it available to the other locations or other people who happen to be using it. Sage does a pretty good job of this. Intuit, not so much. You know, QuickBooks Desktop is a dinosaur in a lot of respects. And while it does have a lot of features and functions, in my opinion, you know, compared to what you can get with a cloud-based provider now, those features and functions aren't nearly as attractive. For example, QBO offers things like bank feeds. It offers real-time reconciliation. It has a number of AI components that make managing your books really effective. The desktop doesn't have most of those tools, you know, and in my opinion, yeah, it doesn't do every single thing desktop does, but man, it's an actual simpler, easier tool to use. And I love being able to access it right here on my mobile device. I love being able to get to that and being able to operate right there. Now, what I would tell you is with hosted stuff, on-premise stuff, sky's the limit for the most part, because you have complete control over anything. You know, you could change the operating system. You could change where the data is located. I mean, you could browse the source files if they're available on your computer. Great. Cloud, you're up to the provider in terms of what they want to support. So just realize that your mileage might vary. Now, many tools will only integrate with one application family, so it's important to check the compatibility of what you are working with. Now, thankfully, you know, the things that they are going to be compatible are probably tools you're using already. So, for example, a lot of these tools are going to be compatible with Office 365, Microsoft 365, as well as Google. So it should work out okay for you. However, if you maybe need to tie into two or three different applications, be wary, because you might run into some limitations with respect to how and where that would function. Often integrations require very, very, very specific setup and configuration in order to be able to use it effectively. Thinking about inventory modules as an example, I mean, you can't just set up inventory any way you want if you expect to use tools like Fishbowl and others. Like, they have specific workflow that you need to follow in order to be able to use that specific tool. It's always important to read the manual. And if you don't know, reach out to the company and see if you can find some more information about how that tool functions and understand what's required for you to use that plugin properly. I will tell you that from my experience, there's often trade-offs with these plugins. Like, it'll do this really well, but it won't do that really well. Or, unfortunately, more specifically, where I've seen is that it will do the thing I want it to do, but not in the way that I want to do it. Again, a simple example of this might be inventory. You know, like, yes, it will track. It's got whiz bang amazing inventory functionality, and it'll do barcodes. It'll do scanning. But you know what? It might have some major massive exception that doesn't work the way I want it to work that could cause a massive issue. As a good example, it might be, well, this is a great inventory module, but it only does FIFO and our company needs to use LIFO or average cost or something like that. It doesn't matter how great that feature function is, unless you're willing to bite off on all of it, you might find some sort of critical exception that might make that tool not useful. I would also tell you that you need to know about that ahead of time. This has happened to me a few times with clients where they've gone and they've gotten some sort of tool or function, gotten all the way towards the end, only to find out it doesn't work the way that they need. Like, oh man, you know, we thought it would work, you know, with multiple locations and multiple classes in QuickBooks, only to find out, well, it doesn't support multiple classes, and it invalidates the entire thing that they've set up. I've also worked in situations where they put their data into particular plugins and tools only to find out that it didn't work and there's no easy way to get back it out or get their data out of it as well. I would tell you, because of the complexity of a lot of these different things, mileage will vary, and you might want to consider engaging with a consultant or a subject matter expert for that particular item, because often you need to read between the lines for that manual listed up there. I could tell you there's a number of tools that I've got experience with, like on the association and nonprofit side or in the manufacturing side, that, you know, what the manual says and what the doc and what the actual application does might be two very, very, very different things. Or, and this happens a lot, actually, it's that there's a specific way that you need to go about doing this. And there's a specific way that that needs to be implemented. And, you know, I will tell you that an ounce of planning is worth a pound of frustration later on. And having somebody who is familiar with that particular tool and how it needs to be used and the specific setup for your organization might be really, really critical. And for some specific applications, it might be really, really, really difficult to back out. A good example of this is QuickBooks Online. Okay, QuickBooks Online, you can't delete anything. It doesn't get rid of it, or at least not very easily. You could reset your file, but man, you don't want to go down that road. You know, if you create an account and you actually don't want that account anymore and you delete the account, it's what we call a logical delete. It's actually still there. It's just hidden from your particular view. Well, I could tell you a lot of people get super frustrated when they transition their QuickBooks desktop to QuickBooks Online, only to find all this junk that they didn't realize was in their QuickBooks file is now present in their online file, and there's no way to get rid of it, you know? Or they might find, for example, they do that import and none of the data matches up from their prior file because they didn't go through and do a lot of the cleanup that QuickBooks recommends. You know, somebody like myself or any of the other K2 instructors could probably give you a little bit of insight as you're working through these tools on best practices to use them effectively. Often when we talk about best practices, it's not like this is a document, you know, it's not like this exists. I mean, there might be some insight, but when we talk about technology best practices, I'm really talking about the battle scars that I've gotten over the years of doing something and it not working and understanding that there might be a better way to do it and how that should be done. Especially with cloud-based tools, there's a lot written between the lines and it's not going to be something that is immediately apparent to you. Someone in your organization or somebody you choose to engage with should really understand what is being done here and how updates and different components are managed inside of the organization. Accountants can be pretty good tech folks. They can also leave a lot of details unsaid. And I would tell you that as somebody who's both a CPA as well as a software developer, there's a lot of really bad practices that I've seen I've seen colleagues do, whether they know them or not know this, they tend to put themselves into a really precarious situation. You know, having a very, very deep understanding of data, in my opinion, is the absolute skill set for the next decade and beyond. Often when I'm talking with colleagues and they ask, like, hey, Steve, what should I learn next? What should I know how to do? My answer is always the same. You should learn how to work with data effectively and also learn how to work with the database. I could tell you that from a database perspective, in about 40 hours, 1 week of time, you can know enough database knowledge to be effective in your job, probably for the rest of your career. I will tell you, to become an expert in databases, it will take you probably a year and a half, 2 years to become pretty good and probably, you know, 10 years into a lifetime to truly, truly master it. But it doesn't take much to actually get pretty good with understanding how data flows and functions. We have what's called the relational data model. And if I were to tell you to learn one thing, it would be how data modeling and how that relational data model works and how it applies to your organization, as well as how systems work and how updates take place, whether they be automatic or manual. Understanding where and how your system is going to modify and change is going to be very beneficial because it will ultimately have an impact on the data. Now, any manual procedures you should document and include on part of your checklist. There's a handful of things that I have not automated. I try to automate a lot in my life, and I've got a fair number of things automated. I just got to show you just on the automation side of this. I got this really super nifty tool here that I use for everyday life. This is called a Stream Deck. And I've got these buttons essentially that kick off all these different automations in all the different programs from Excel to PowerPoint to even this presentation right now. So I love, love, love automation, but some things have to be done manually. And if you're going to do something manually, you need to document it, mostly so that you get consistency. And for the stuff that I manually do, I write a text file. I love text files. And I will write steps down, essentially, so that when I go and do it the next period, it makes sense. And I do it consistently and uniformly. So if you're doing, for example, like a manual reconciliation or some sort of manual update to your data, do yourself a favor, write just general steps down of what you've done so that if you leave the company, somebody else can roughly follow what you did. And if you're moving data from one system to the other, whether it's from the main system to some sort of add-in or you're posting journal entries, man, does that documentation make a huge benefit. And I could tell you, do a lot of data translation, a lot of data migration from one system to the other. Devil's always in the details. You know, it's never going to work the way you think it's going to work day one. And being able to do a import, check it, make sure it works, make sure it functions the way I want, inevitably, there will always be a problem. Well, that's not an issue because I've written it down. I adjust those procedures where it didn't work, and then I'll go back and I'll correct that later on. Okay, and you should have somebody here that's familiar with this to be able to troubleshoot it as errors occur. I can tell you anything involving synchronization, there will be a problem. 100% of the time, you will have a problem with your synchronization at some point. Nothing works in a vacuum, and there will always be something. It's going to be like, oh, we built this tool to synchronize, but it, you know, didn't support a 7-digit SKU number because our company grew and we added another digit to our SKUs. Or we've got the synchronization work for users, you know, but we didn't anticipate somebody having a suffix to their name like junior or senior. Well, knowing those issues, identifying those issues, fixing those issues can be really frustrating. Having somebody available to you can really, really, really help. Another thing with respect to licensing is remembering how these things are billed and what they will cost. Plugins are always addition to whatever you're paying for that core package, and they can add up quickly. And I'm going to mention another thing with respect to security here in a second, but plugins are fantastic. They're wonderful, but just realize they always are an additional cost to whatever you're already currently spending. And, you know, if you've got two or three or four of these, fine. But if you start building a ton of them and using a ton of them, man, can that price add up really, really, really quickly. I will also point out, every time you add a plugin, you're also introducing the risk of security as well. I don't want to scare anybody away from this particular approach, but having a reasonable approach to security is important for an organization. And I think one or two plugins, three or four plugins, maybe, okay. But don't go crazy on these things, adding every single possible component and tool. A, you won't use them. In my experience, most folks, for example, let's say it's a customer relationship management, a CRM plugin for their accounting system. 9 times out of 10, they'll use them for the first week and then never think about them again. But they'll leave this portal open to another solution that is sharing data and syncing data back. You might be paying for it, but my biggest risk would be security. Especially if it's a tool outside running in some sort of cloud that I don't directly manage. Well, I mean, that could present a pretty significant security risk to the organization. I have a client who will remain nameless and in their infinite wisdom transitioned from a mid-market ERP solution, pseudo custom built to order for their particular use case, to a more plugin based approach. And they went from running maybe, you know, a core solution where everything was kind of purpose built to this other solution that was based in a open source content management system. Well, they have almost, I'm going to say, 60 plugins running across their enterprise for payroll, HR, sales tax, all these different things. And it's created this dependency nightmare because in order to update, everything has to update simultaneously, and not every update, not every plugin updates at the same time. And so they've created this issue now where they're often 6 months behind wherever the latest security best practices would tell us to be. So be conscious and aware of that. Now, there's also this concept of marketplaces, okay? So we're going to take a look at a couple here. We've got the QuickBooks Online Marketplace as well as the Xero Marketplace, okay? And these are kind of cool tools to browse and just kind of see what is possible with respect to your tools. And you can kind of get some ideas in terms of different things that you might want to use for your services and what that might be, for example, for, you know, the different types of plugins and the different functionalities that your potential accounting system could integrate with and what that could potentially look like for you. So I would say that the QuickBooks Marketplace is really mature. They've got, for example, a lot of different tools ranging from payroll to sales tax to inventory management to, you know, lots of other things in there. And you can actually check out a lot of these different things and get ideas for, you know, different components that you might choose to want to add to your organization. Now, it's important to note with the QBO and QBD, there are different pass essentially for the integration. And that a QBO plugin is not going to work on QBD and vice versa. Usually QBD and QBE, QuickBooks Desktop and QuickBooks Enterprise will, you know, because ultimately they're pretty much the same application there. But QuickBooks Online and QuickBooks Desktop are completely different applications. It's important to note, and this is something I always like to say with respect to QuickBooks Online, it shares a name with the desktop product, but that are where their similarities end. They are completely different applications with completely different intentions with respect to what they do and how they function. And so just be aware of that as well. Now, a big question to ask would be, where is my data stored? Sometimes, for example, with these plugins, they might not be storing it as part of the QuickBooks Online file. They could be storing it on their own servers. Be aware that that server might not be in the country that you're located. That could be a particular issue for, you know, you if you're dealing, for example, with sensitive client data, or you're dealing with IRS issues where data has to be disclosed if it's not being kept in the United States. So just be aware, when it's a SaaS-based environment, you don't get 100% control over where and how that data is located and stored. All right, let's go ahead. I want to show you the QuickBooks Marketplace so you can just kind of get a sense of what this is. Now, if you'd like to check this out yourself, check out just Google Intuit Apps, and you can go ahead and get a sense of this app marketplace. So if we come on over here, if we're running the QBOA, QuickBooks Online Accountant, if we drop down here to our apps section, you could see a nice collection of apps. And it's important to note, in the QuickBooks Online environment, you have client apps, okay? And then you also have firm apps. So you can install apps on behalf of your clients, or you can install apps into your individual firm file itself. So they've got some essential apps here. For example, customer relationship management using Method. They've got SOS inventory, QuickBooks Time. One of my personal favorites here is Expensify. I love, 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 love Expensify for employee expense tracking. I'll talk about that towards the end of our presentation today. And what this allows us to do is to pull, in this particular case, Expensify data into QuickBooks, or QuickBooks data into Expensify. And we can essentially link these two things together so that they will easily data share with each other. And that's about as simple as it could possibly get. Now, there's other apps that are specifically designed for firms, you know, for practice management or workflow and collaborative document processing. If we come up here, we can search for specific apps as well. Here's another one. Here's Stripe. Stripe is a online payment processor where you can pull in credit card data. You know, here's an example of where we might want to process credit cards and be able to reconcile those Stripe deposits with the actual sales of our company. Well, this tool will pull in that data directly from Stripe. There's also tools, for example, for importing and exporting data, which we're going to talk about next here, that can be really, really, really effective for getting data in or getting out. One of my particular favorite is this SaaSAnt application that allows you to be able to import in data directly to Excel, as well as to export data to directly from Excel as well. Now, one of the big reasons I like this is that it gives us the ability to import in a heck of a lot more stuff than what the Intuit native tools will allow us to do. So I can actually import in a lot more transactional detail and inventory detail using this particular tool than I ever could using Intuit's core products itself. So the takeaway from here is that these marketplaces make it easy to be able to add tools, makes it easy to be able to work. All we have to do is find the tools that we'd like to use, click this Get App Now, and it will install it into either our client files or into our firm applications. Okay, let's go ahead and take a look at our next section here, which SaaSAnt will do a very good job about, which is data importing and syncing. So getting our data in and out of these tools is really important, because ideally we want to minimize the setup for anything that we choose to use. We ideally want to make this fast, easy, efficient, and there are a lot of different protocols that we can consider using for getting our data in and out of these tools and solutions. So the most obvious way of handling this would be manually. So in the manual method, we're typically doing journal entries, we are typically running reports, we're doing some sort of manual reconciliation to pull data in and out, okay? We can always do that. And depending on, I would say, the sophistication, the, let's say, veracity of the data, that means how much it changes, the quantity of data, let me think, what else would be big indicators here? Well, those are probably our big ones. Let's say complexity, amount of change, and quantity would probably be three drivers which would determine whether or not I do something manually. As I mentioned, I love automation, and I automate a lot of different things. And I feel that if it is pretty simple and it is pretty standard, doesn't change that often, but I do it a lot, automated. However, there's some stuff that I just do that doesn't change that often. I don't need it that regularly, and I could spend hours automating something that I can typically do in minutes. A good example of this is for like investment accounts, at least for me personally, you know, reconciling an account to fair market value, like for example, a stock account or an IRA or a 401k or something like that. I'm not tracking transactional level detail to this thing, nor do I really want that transactional level of detail in my account. I just want to know when I run a balance sheet, how much is the fair market value of that particular investment. Well, you know what? I just do that manually. I just go to the accounting solution. I go to my investment portfolio. I look at the current balance, figure out what the difference needs to be, and I do a journal entry. I do it 4 times a year. Done. So manual, do not rule it out all the way because it will, you know, sometimes make sense for what you're choosing to do. Now, other particular ways you might want to use import and export tools. Okay. And there's a couple of examples here. If you're using QuickBooks Online, I personally use that Sassant tool and it's real nice. So these are nice if you're doing bulk stuff, you want to do batch processing. Another really kind of cool tool to add into this mix here would be Power Query from Excel. Fortunately, I don't have the space to really kind of go into Power Query. I love Power Query. It's one of my absolute favorite tools inside of Excel. And if you're interested on that, I'm going to recommend you take a look at the CPE Today podcast, where I've got a couple of episodes where we talk about Power Query. And I can tell you, we're going to be discussing that tool in depth over the next month or so. So it's definitely worth a look. And if you've never worked with it before, what I will tell you is that Power Query is like pure magic to Excel. It can take any data in any style and any format and make it usable. It's essentially a pre-processing engine to clean up data. And the best part about it is it remembers what you do and it will recall those steps sequentially. So if you add columns, delete columns, parse data, split it, combine it, whatever, when you get that data again the next month, it just does those actions again for you, saving you all the manual effort that you might choose to use. So there are these tools that essentially that can bulk process those transactions for you. And it's not a bad method either. We can use pre-built integrations provided by the vendor or solution provider. And in fact, many of the tools that we're going to talk about, you know, for like e-commerce or credit card processing or employee expense reconciliation or AP management will typically offer some sort of integration with it. Usually it'll work. However, with one big caveat is if you do not have the exact use case that they built their integration tool for, it's not going to work for you. It's not that it doesn't work. It won't work for you in the way that you're choosing to do your accounting. So these integrations, if you can make them work for you, are great. If not, just realize there's no flexibility with it. You can use integration platform as a service or IPaaS. These are services such as Zapier, OneSaaS, Microsoft Power Automate, and others. These solutions are what we call a trigger and action workflow tool. They look for something to occur and then they go and do something. A tool like Zapier, for example, can watch your QuickBooks and it can look, for example, when Steve adds a new account or Steve gets a payment from a customer, or Steve issues a check to a vendor. It could see when that particular transaction occurs and can kick off its own workflow where it will essentially perform a series of actions doing whatever I tell it to do. You know, so as an example with this, let's say it's QuickBooks. And let's say I'm setting up a new customer. Okay, well, let's consider, and I would tell you, anytime you're designing systems inside of an organization, you want to figure out what we call the database of record. Okay, what is the digital truth of whatever we're working on? And that digital truth essentially is the system that is ultimately going to control the flow of data. And when we go to make a change, we do it in that one system. And then ideally, it flows into all the other solutions that we're using. Well, we create that new customer in QuickBooks Online. Okay, we put in the first name, the last name, the email, the address. Well, a service like Power Automate or Zapier says, oh, Steve created a new customer. It will then go to other ancillary systems. It might go, for example, to our inventory solution or our accounts receivable solution or something like that and set up that customer. And if I change the name, the address, it goes and sees that that change occurs and sends that information. These are good, in my opinion, temporary solution. They're a good solution for organizations that have limited IT expertise and development expertise because they're pretty much point and click. All the configuration's done in a browser, really not a lot for you to do. It either works for you or it doesn't. Now, the space that I live in and where my clients live in are down here in this write your own interface. Okay. In this particular instance, we leverage the product's software development kit or their API. Okay. Application programming interface. We'll talk more on that here in a minute. And we make it do what we want it to do. Now, this is the absolute best possible solution. The only downside of it is that it is not free and it costs money because there's considerable professional services. However, think about it this way. Let's say, for example, it's automation between three or four systems and you're paying somebody to do that currently. Yeah, it might cost you time and resources to write your own interface, but if it takes something that might be done 10 times a day at 10 minutes per instance, you know, you pay for that integration once, you're saving 100 minutes every single day. That's 500 minutes per week. It starts to add up really quickly. I will tell you, it's never been a better time. And I'm not saying this just because I work in this space. It's never been a better time to write custom software for your organization. And organizations that are developing their own intellectual property, their own software, are going to be the organization set up for success because you know what? Their systems work for them. Now, synchronizing data between cloud apps is often harder than it is with on-premise solutions, mostly just because we don't have all the things that are available to us. We have to work within the context of the provider. We have to work in the context of what that provider makes available. We have to go and we have to look at the tools and say, okay, this is what Intuit QuickBooks provides. This is what Xero provides. This is what Salesforce will do. And if we don't like it, tough. We have no impact on whether or not they're going to support or stop supporting some feature in the future. So let's compare, for example, the on-premise as well as the online solutions. On-premise typically done with what's called an API SDK with very few limitations. More on that in a minute. We will, for example, sometimes just pull the database directly using technologies such as ODBC and just pull the data out, you know, without asking for permission. Totally fine. Okay, we have the option to use supported and unsupported methods for interfacing data. And that's a good example of that is using that ODBC where we can just suck that data out. We don't need Intuit's permission because they're not involved in that decision making. We could delay updates if they're going to break an integration. This is an important thing. Most folks don't realize when they build their own applications, if they're a SaaS-based environment, you know, Intuit can change something and you could do it today, but if they change it, you might not be able to do it tomorrow. If it's on-premise, we can delay that. We can choose to do it at a later point if it's going to break our inventory integration or our point-of-sale integration. Users can be made an administrator on the local machine, giving them access to stuff like the database engine, how the application's used, and access in terms of getting to the data is virtually unlimited. Now, let's compare that to the online. Okay, the scope of the content is available can be quite limited. Okay, and it could be limited, for example, to creating and maintaining user accounts or updating vendors, but not receivables or something like that. We don't get the control. We get whatever they choose to allow us to do it. Tools such as ODBC, open database connectivity, more on that here in a minute, might not be available because we don't have access to the actual database server where that data is being held. The remote server is secured, so root access is not possible. That's not a bad thing, by the way. I will say generally, all things equal, online services are generally more secure than on-premise services because on-premise, you can modify typically the security and you can modify the runtime environment. With online, you get whatever you get. Updates are made at the publisher's schedule and it can absolutely break things if the publisher is not updated to the latest updates and the latest functionality of the application. And the current offerings typically will be a little bit more limited compared to what you would get for your on-premise solutions. Okay, I'm going to pause here for a question, and I want to point out if anybody has any questions here, by all means, please feel free to ask. I love questions, and I am more than happy to address. All righty. Does the provider of the add-on have to certify their software with Intuit? Okay, and this is being asked by one of the attendees here. And the answer is, in most circumstances, yes. Let me pull up something real quick. So, most organizations will have what is called a developer program that allows people to be able to build apps on top of their organizational data and be able to either develop them internally or be able to ultimately maybe even be able to sell these apps to other people. Let's go ahead and take a look at Intuit. Okay, so if you go to developer.intuit.com, you can get a sense of the different things that Intuit offers for people like me who can write software and develop their own code to do things. Okay, so in this particular environment, this would be where I would learn how to modify different things with respect to QuickBooks Online, either pushing or pulling data to it. Okay, and this is where all the updates are going to be. And a lot of this is fairly technical, you know, in terms of how and where this would work. But they will typically have a process where we can go through and we can create our app for developer. First and foremost, we'd need a developer account. In this case, I have one. We'd build our first app. We would publish our first app. They would, testing it to make sure it works. And they've got a number of different interfaces that I could choose to work with. But until it gets published, I cannot maybe make this available to other people. Okay. So at some point, for example, there's going to be a going live perspective. Now, a lot of publishers, for example, will let you make your own app for internal use. You know, let's just say it's Steve's company here. Steve wants to make his own interface. Go nuts. You can use your own data because you're not going to screw it up for anybody else. However, that's different than, for example, getting listed on the app store. When we choose to get listed on their particular app store, we're typically going to have to go through a number of specific requirements in order to be met. So for example here, they'll tell us, let's zoom in on this so you can see this a little bit easier. Apps published on the QuickBooks App Store must not only meet these requirements of publication, but continuously after publishing, Intuit checks all apps annually to ensure they still meet the technical and security requirements. So if I wanted to make an app and I wanted to deploy this and let you, for example, use it in your organization, I have to follow Intuit's rules, you know, and they also tell you, for example, they're going to do a technical review and that technical review might take up to 20 days. They're going to have specific requirements about how and where this app can be used, how that particular connection should work, how the data should be stored and processed. They're going to have, for example, a bunch of different server requirements. Okay. Must meet these requirements before they are published. Okay. If you do not meet these requirements at the time of publication, they have the right to remove them. In addition, apps not published on the store must meet the requirements that they exceed 500 connections. So at a certain level, certain additional thresholds will kick in that will require me to, you know, if I'm getting a lot of utilization on this, take even additional steps. So they've listed out, for example, how my server has to be configured. It will, for example, list out the different vulnerabilities that we have to specifically protect against, as well as how data can be used. It'll tell me, for example, your app does not provide third parties with access to QBO data via external API calls. Okay, saying I can't, for example, let other people get access to my customer data, which is all really good stuff. And how and where that professional potential sensitive data must be stored. So when I choose to build something, these are the things that I have to agree to. Now, these apps aren't certified in the sense like they're not endorsed by Intuit. I don't know if they actually use the word certification, but I will say that there are, let's call them community standards that must be followed in order for this to function and work. Hey, colleagues, welcome back. Let's go ahead and have our three review questions and wrap up for the day. Which of the following is a revenue characteristic of the SMB segment? Is it making less than $1 billion in revenue? You betcha. Anything less than $1 billion is going to fall in the SMB segment. It might be small business. It might be medium business, but it is sure as heck one or the other. Anything over $1 billion is going to be considered large business. So that's your Ford, your Coca-Colas, and more. All right. Our next question. Which of the following is important to consider when choosing an add-on solution? Okay, is it checking software compatibility? You betcha. You definitely want to get stuff that's going to work well for your company. Is it integrations with that require a specific software setup? Yeah, you're going to want to know that if you're going to have to do it and certainly get stuff that fit that specific setup criteria for your company. Is it knowing the licensing for your add-ons or additional costs? Absolutely. Correct answer here is all of the above. All right, our third question. Why is ODBC important and useful for integration and reporting projects? Is it that ODBC is a highly specific coding language that only works on one operating system? Nope. Is it that ODBC is an independent programming language that adds extra level of security to protect your data? Not really. The correct answer here is that ODBC is independent of a independent and really kind of works on any operating system with the correct drivers. One of the really cool things about ODBC is that it is an ISO standard for interoperability with databases since 1992. So as long as your accounting system was built after 1992, there's a pretty good chance you can pull data out using ODBC. And it has saved my tail a number of times when trying to pull data out of accounting systems for my clients for the various projects over the years. So today we discussed the common needs for add-on products in small and medium in the small and medium business market. We talked about some of the shortfalls in that we can find in add-on solutions. We talked about some of the differences between on-premise and cloud-based accounting solutions, as well as different levels of the market where we might want to get a accounting package. Now, in the second episode of this, we're going to go ahead and talk about some of the major packages that are out there that you might want to consider for things such as inventory control, timekeeping, and document management, project management, e-commerce, and more. And we're going to learn to identify the different needs, different solutions that are out there that might fit the specific needs of your organization. Now, as our final reminder, if you are a financial professional, you can earn credits for watching or listening to today's class. It's super simple. Head on over to cpetoday.com, use course code AA01, take a short 5-question quiz, and you will earn a credit for today's course. In addition to this particular podcast, we've got courses on just about every aspect and walk of life, from accounting and audit to business management, advisory, growth, Excel, and more. CP Today is your one-stop shop for maintaining all of your education for your professional needs. If you enjoyed our podcast for today, we would love for you to connect on social media. You can find us on all social media channels at CPE Today. We're on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and more. We'd love nothing more than for you to leave a comment or maybe subscribe to our channel on the podcast platform of your choosing, where you will always get up-to-date information and notified when new episodes are available. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, and more, wherever you happen to get your content. It's been a pleasure being with you here today. Best wishes, and I look forward to seeing you back in the office the next time around. Take care.